And now, with thanks to Bright Ideas Lighting, Talbot Avenue at Lone. Building or renovating? They work with you to create a bespoke lighting plan for your home. Brightideas.ie. Doing it ourselves is all yain of Sinn Féin. Sounds political, so we'd better abstain from going down that road, as Fianna Faulkner showed. So let's do housework, simple and plain. Like, I mean, with Brian Clunan.
Good morning.
Good morning, how are we?
We're in good form.
Good.
How's your digestive system?
Stop. You made a tiny, tiny little burp. Yeah, I just after sharing a video that he produced, which made the burp sound like it went on for about 30 seconds.
That I produced?
Yes, you produced. He said, the lads. Now, the lads refers to one person only.
Anyway, that is the voice of Brian Clunan from Clunan's Hardware in Tullamore, who shall be gracing us with his presence until 11 o'clock. And the first question concerns an old wool carpet in the living room that was lifted last summer and replaced with a new carpet that has an insulated underlay. Now there's an awful smell of damp in the room. The last carpet was there for more than 40 years without a problem.
Yeah. So when you said an old wool carpet, I thought it was going to be the carpet beetle that always, you know, so many houses in Ireland with wool carpets get eaten by carpet moth or carpet beetle at the edges. But in this case, so I think the problem is very simple. There was a wool carpet down and it's down in a concrete floor, and the concrete floor has a little bit, it's not sealed completely. So there's a little bit of rising damp coming up through the floor. And because it was a wool carpet, which traditionally had a fabric underlay on it. So, or just no underlay, really. It was just the quality of the carpet was so good and so heavy, it didn't need an underlay. So the carpet went straight down on the concrete. And the little bit of moisture that was coming up from the floor was evaporating away. And everything was fine. Because the heat in the house meant that the small amount of moisture coming up just evaporated away and evaporated away. And this happened for whatever the listener said, 40 years. No problem whatsoever. Now what's happened is the listener has taken up the wool carpet. Obviously, after 40 years, it needed a replacement. It was worn. And they did as they should do nowadays, which is put down a rubber type underlay and then put the new carpet on top of that. But now the moisture, it's a small amount of moisture, it's a very small amount of moisture, is coming up the whole time, but it can't go anywhere. So now the concrete floor, which was almost completely dry because it was allowed to evaporate away, is now completely saturated because it can't go anywhere. The moisture's coming and coming and coming and coming and can't get away.
And is mould forming?
And mould is forming.
Yeah. Oh dear.
So you will have to lift the carpet. Now, the good news is the carpet won't be affected because the mould is between the underlay and the floor. So you're going to have to lift the carpet first, then lift the underlay and either treat the underlay with an antifungal treatment or replace the underlay. Then you're going to have to, well, what I would say is kill all the mould first and then seal the floor. And then, so put on a fungicidal solution to kill all the mould. Then put on a sealer on the floor, then put on another treatment of the anti-mold thing is very, very cheap. The floor sealer, depending how bad it is, will be more expensive. But you kill the mold, you seal the floor, you put on another coat of mold killer to make sure that there's no reoccurrence. And don't wash that off. Just leave the mold killer in place. Then you put on either your treated underlay or I would say it's not hugely expensive. Get a new underlay to make sure there's no mould on it whatsoever. And then put down the carpet again and all will be well. But it's not an uncommon problem in an old house where the floor isn't just absolutely 100%. It's 90% or it's 95%. But unfortunately, that 5% or that 10% of moisture coming up the whole time, if it can't get away, it's going to collect and cause problems.
A listener in Baltinglass.
Baltinglass County.
Wicklow.
Oh, yeah.
I have many relations in Baltic Glass, as it happens. Anyway, they want to thank you for your advice about placing a photograph of an owl in the window to ward off magpies who are fowling nightly.
Oh, a very nice gentleman from Baltic Glass rang me last week. And, great. I'm
so
glad.
It worked.
Yeah, it worked.
Thumbs up.
And I was hoping, you know the way sometimes, so when someone rings you in the shop, the shop's really busy. And obviously, you know, I answered the phone, but it suddenly got very busy and you're trying to race through the answer because it's a conversation. Very often, a lot of the conversations we have are repetitive because at the time of the year, so, you know, at this time of the year, every single day, now I mean every single day, we will have 10 people in the shop with ants. So they've ants in the house. Now, we've heard every variety of the problems and the things they do. And I do, you know, I find them fascinating. But you're having the same conversation again and again. And sometimes when you're repeating the same thing again and again, it can sound a little bit rushed and a little bit. So I remember thinking after I hung up, I hope I didn't come across as being rude because I was trying to get to the counter.
But also you're so familiar with it. You might leave out a step. You want to tell it as if it's the first time every time.
That's it exactly. That's it exactly. You're dead right.
Mary says she has problems with birds making a very bad mess on her car. And it's not parked under cables or under trees. So she's wondering, what can she use to get birds to leave it alone? The car is being destroyed.
Yeah, I remember having this problem, but I wondered, did I do something to pee off those birds? Because exactly that, they weren't under. And the problem was, it was a van, and the van was high. So I have a little van at the moment, and it's low. But the van I had was a transit van, and it was higher than I was. So it's only when I used to park it. So I moved where I parked it, in case that was the issue, and it was still happening.
And they followed it.
But the problem was, where the van now was, you could really see it every time I went upstairs. But up until then, I wasn't really as aware of it. And the problem is, as we discussed before, if you leave the bird poo there without washing it off, it is slightly acidic and it can do damage to the roof of the van, which in a car you'll see it, but in a van it could sit there for quite some time without anybody being aware of it and not realising it's actually going to take the paint off. It's going to cause rust on the roof eventually if it's left alone. So
I wonder, is it a certain colour they find offensive?
No, they're just flying it. So the probability is that there's a nest nearby and it's on the path. You know, it could be if it was starlings, there could be starlings going in under the roof line and they're flying in and out on the flight line.
On the flight path, yeah.
On the flight path, that's the word I was looking for. And as they leave the nest, they crap. And often as they go back to the nest, they crap. And so we did talk about, we did talk about the kite hawk last week.
Oh, here he goes again. Apologies to everybody in Clare.
But the kite hawk works quite well. A hanging, there's an owl that hangs and floats in the air. There's a falcon that hangs and floats in the air. But with all these things that hang and float and move in the air, you should always try and move them. So the kite hawk is a very easy move because it's just a spike goes into the ground. But you could make up a spike to hang either of those two. So literally you could have a bamboo cane a thin stake and something coming off it, like a bracket, like a right angle bracket or an angle coming off it. So once you keep moving the bird around, they don't seem to realise it's actually artificial. Whereas if you leave it in the same spot, they within a week they've realised, hey guys, this guy isn't moving. And they just, you know, at the beginning they stay 30 metres away and then they stay 28 metres away and then they stay 25 metres away and they just keep edging back closer and closer and closer to see where the problem is. Now, if it's a case of the bird in question or birds in question have a nest nearby, you're not going to stop them because if they're rearing young, you know, they will find a way around it. Because once the young are in the nest, they're not leaving that nest unless, you know, the worst case scenario. So it is a case of being sensible. You can't expect miracles from something like that. If it's to keep it away from attacking crops, it works really well because there's other crops around. But if the nest is nearby and they need to get to the nest, they will get to the nest. That is nature, you know, Mother Nature will The mother bird, the father bird needs to get to the nest and they'll find a way around.
And what's important is just don't resign to leave it on the car. Even if you're cleaning it every day, you're frustrated.
Absolutely. Or maybe, throw a tarpaulin over it or throw a blanket over it every day, every night when you pull in. You know, that a blanket that's wet, a drop cloth for painting, throw it over it, open the door to slam the door on it to stop it blowing away.
Brian Clunan is here from Clunan's Hardware in Tullamore until 11. And I'm showing him a picture that has been sent via WhatsApp of a windowsill with lots of yellow and lots of white. And this would be some form of lichen or lichen or whatever you want to call it.
Which is correct. I think it's lichen, but most of us call it lichen.
I'll call it lichen. Yeah. If you say lichen, I'll say lichen.
Yeah, that is a given. Yeah, absolutely. A lot of algae, moss, lichen, all sorts of stuff growing this winter. It's been such a wet couple of years, but particularly a very wet and mild winter. So in that particular picture, we probably everyone's familiar with it. You'll see the big yellow. It's not moss. It is definitely lichen or lichen, and big yellow patches, and that has to be killed. The white will die as well when you spray it off. But the problem is, it is harder to remove. So what I would say in this particular case is, wait for fine weather. It has to be above 6 degrees and no heavy rain for the next 24 hours. Spray on the moss, algae, fungicide. It's a biocide technically. So spray on the biocide. As always with these things, try and, before you buy it, work out which is the best value, because the mixing rates can vary. And you want to know, so just ask, what's the best of them? You know, what is, they vary a lot. And a lot of them use the very same product, but they use it in varying strengths. So you spray it on, you leave it then, I would always say for about a week or 10 days until it's well and truly dead. And then you either power wash it off gently, depending on what it is. If it's a concrete path, if it's windowsills, in this case, it's a wall. Is that right? Is it a wall? Yeah.
I've moved on from...
All right, I'm pretty sure it's a wall.
Sorry.
So you can power wash that aggressively as you want, but always kill it first, because otherwise you're just spreading spores everywhere. But also...
Sorry, it's windowsill.
Windowsill. It'll come off so much easier once it's dead. Just be careful. I'm saying this to everybody. So lots of people are getting their roofs power washed because they're so bad after the winter. But just be very careful. If you talk to... say Condon Concrete, who make roof tiles, they will tell you, or they did always, I don't know if they still do, that you should never really power wash it. If you power wash it aggressively, in particular, it's one thing to gently power wash it, you won't do damage. But if you power wash it aggressively, you will damage the surface, and it becomes much more porous. It is going to get moss much more quickly in the future because you've power washed it. And you have to power wash it aggressively to take off a live moss. Live lichen, live moss. To take it off requires a heavy power washing, because it's alive. It's holding on. Mm. It's tight. If it's dead, it's already breaking down. If you kill it today and come back in a fortnight, it's nearly falling off its own accord. Now you can keep your power washer jet well back and at a wide setting. So it's really only the same pressure as a sweeping brush, but you're just using the water to do, instead of your muscle, to brush it off. So just be very careful about that. In this case, I would say 2 weeks' time, power wash it, it'll all come off. But if the lichen, the yellow will definitely come off. The white sometimes is harder to remove. So in this case, because it's a windowsill, it's accessible. Just come back afterwards. In fact, what I would say in this case is leave it the 2 weeks, then get a bit of fine sandpaper or medium sandpaper and just sand the white spots and then power wash. Because when you've broken through, you don't have to take off every last bit of it, but when you've broken the surface on the white spot, if you take off, 50% of the white mark with a bit of sandpaper, it will 100% come off with the power washing, because now the seal is broken out and it will break down. The power washer will take off the rest.
This is possibly the most unusual key I've ever seen, but Brian, of course, being a locksmith.
It is a double-sided key, either from a safe or from a really old piano lock, or the rolling cabinet locks? You know, you know, what's this the word for it is? You know, you have a desk, mm-hmm. and then you have this shutter that rolls up, but it's all timber.
Yes.
The name won't come to me. They often came with that double bitted key. So a double bitted key, if you take what people would call a chub key, or many people would be familiar with a basta key. So it's not like a Yale key with little teeth on it. It is a longer key with one side and all these little cuts on it. So this is simply a double-sided, we'll call it chub key, where instead of having when you have a chub key, we'll call it again, you have one bit with all the cuts in it. This has two bits, one either side, and you will get them cut without a problem. You'll get it reproduced, copied without a problem.
So any reputable locksmith,
we'll copy that. No problem.
Next is a listener who has just built their house. The paint hasn't even gone on yet, but there is already mildew starting to grow on the plasterwork.
Inside, yeah. Okay. So this is quite a common problem where when a house is plastered, it's really important to ventilate it. So you have loads of moisture. It's fresh plaster. There's loads and loads of moisture. So, I mean, if speed is of the essence, you need to dry it out. You need to vent, put on heat. And if you really want the whole thing to happen very quickly, you turn on the heat, you leave it for a couple of hours, you'd open every window and door, let it blow through, let the moisture out that has been created. All this, you know, if I walked into that house, so it's been plastered a few days and someone turns on the heat and I walk into the house, what will happen to me? My glasses will fog up instantly because it's so humid in there. So all this humidity is in the air. So when you open all the windows and doors, if I walk in 5 minutes after all the windows and doors open, it's all gone. So if speed is of the essence, you heat and open windows and doors, heat and open windows and doors. If speed isn't of the essence, you just leave as many windows open as you can. Now, obviously, if it's a house in an area that you know isn't secure, if it's a house out in the middle of nowhere and you don't want anyone breaking into the house, leaving the windows and doors open all the time is a problem.
But then if it's not painted, there probably isn't very much inside, is there?
All the plumbing fittings.
True,
You know, this is the problem. People have done this in the past and find it, the copper cylinder is gone, you know, or whatever. And it's the damage done in taking the plumbing fittings is the problem. So like one of the things I'd always say in a house like this, if you're building a house, you should try to avoid filling all the rads and so on if you don't need to. Filling everything that might be taken, and it's the water that'll do the damage if they do come in and break in and steal stuff. Mm. But in this particular case, just ventilate as much as you can now, even still. But more importantly, just get a fungal treatment and spray it on, kill all the mould, and then once the mould is dead, because you're going to be painting everything fresh, just sand off the mould. So we'd often talk about the need to use a stain block. But you won't need to use a stain block in this case because you're starting to paint everything. So just sand off all the dead mould.
Once it's dead?
Once it's dead. Don't try and touch it.
24, 48 hours after treatment?
48 hours. Exactly. And always remember, because we do get this every now and again, always remember, you when you're painting inside in the house, I nearly used a bad word that you would use quite happily. We'll say gobdaw. There you go. Some gobdaw is sitting in a pub will tell you, oh, you should seal the walls now before you paint them. You'll use less paint. So don't seal the walls. It'll cause you problems in the long term. All you do is get a good quality, inexpensive white emulsion. Thin it out substantially and let it into the plaster. So instead of having a very definite skin on the plaster, the first coat should always be thinned out, and then it penetrates into the plaster, and your next coat of paint will grip to that without any problem whatsoever, and that'll be cheaper than sealing it.
Excellent. Brian Clunan is here from Clunan's Hardware in Tullamore, and his next dilemma comes from Colm in Roscommon. Is there a white powder that I can spray or shake on tarmac to get rid of moss and algae?
Read that question again.
A white powder that I can spray or shake on tarmac to get rid of moss and algae. I suspect maybe somebody's seen washing powder being used.
So the bleach and washing powder will kill moss.
Mm.
It's not the most economical. You're better just actually use bleach if you want, but don't use it on tarmac. Definitely do not use it on tarmac. We've had people buy tarmac paint to cover up the marks left by washing powder and tarmac. So the only advantage of the washing powder...
Just in case you're half listening.
Yes.
Don't do it.
Yeah. So washing powder is handy in that it works when it's raining. Whereas if you're using liquid bleach, you want a dry 24 hours after you put it on, or a dry number of hours after you put it on. But chlorine is better still. So if you go to anybody who sells agri products, they'll have chlorine products, which would be stronger, much stronger than ordinary bleach. But definitely use none of these things on tarmac. Only use one of the biocide algae or moss killers on tarmac.
John had a problem with windows and sills and patios covered in green slime. So what he did was he grabbed Domestos bleach, mixed 4-to-1 with water. Not a bit of lichen or lichen on it now, he says.
Right, okay. So again, on surfaces like that, that's okay. What we're trying to discourage people from doing is using any of the bleach or chlorine-based products on upright surfaces, because bleach in your eye is very dangerous. So it's very, you just have to be, it's fine to use chlorine on ground surfaces. Windowsills, you know, not so bad because they're down low. You don't be using them up on second story windows where you have the potential of you're looking up at what you're doing and bleach is coming down on top of you, and that's really dangerous.
Back to the very first question, which was about underlay and mould.
Okay.
These days, is it not more common for underlay only to be used where there's underfloor heating, because the insulation isn't as good as the modern foam underlay that is generally placed in houses?
So this, if I remember, this was a 40-year, like the
this was somebody
was
who pulled up a 40-year-old carpet. Yeah.
So look, I don't know, that obviously only the listener knows why they did, whoever did what they did. I don't know.
All right. Next, does Brian have any idea what would put off crows? Would the owl picture that was mentioned earlier be effective on them, or are they more discerning?
So the owl picture was where the crow, the birds, I forget what birds they were. So the gentleman in Balti Glass had birds attacking the rubber seals on his window.
Mm.
And we just suggested that he go online and print off a good picture of an owl with the big eyes, and that was enough to keep them away from attacking the window. Now, putting a picture of an owl in your window, if the crows are, you know, eating something in the vegetable garden, isn't going to work. So it depends what they're doing and where they are.
So you're back maybe to the hawk kite?
You're back to the hawk kite. But again, if they're rearing young, I just want to say that. I mean, it works brilliantly. But if they're nesting in that area, they will continue to be there. So if you put it over the vegetable garden, they won't attack the vegetable garden, but they'll still be in the area because the young are there.
So it depends what you're trying to achieve.
Yeah.
Will, can you ask Brian a question about my bathroom ceiling, which has become mouldy over the last 3 years, and I'm looking to prevent it from coming back because it's a pain in the ass job every year. Back to ventilation, I suppose, isn't it?
Yeah, so it's back to ventilation. Well, no, not necessarily. Ventilation definitely, you know, is a major contributing factor to stopping that from happening into the future. But I would say to you, in a bathroom ceiling, because of what it is, put on your fungicidal solution, leave it 24 hours, wash it off. Instead of painting it with ordinary emulsion paint, paint it with what's known as acrylic eggshell or water-based satin finish. Now, that's designed for painting woodwork. It's what you'd put on the doors in the house. But because it's water-based, it's just like an emulsion. But because it's acrylic and designed for woodwork, it's totally non-permeable. So you won't get the same level of moisture passing through it. And when you're finished doing the painting, just wipe on one more coat of the fungicidal solution that you did use to kill it in the first place, so that there's a filament of that left behind. And if it's not that bad, if you happen to have any exterior wall paint, so Plantex, Weathershield, you know, any of those, you can put two coats of that in your ceiling And that has a huge amount of antifungal treatment in it because it's designed for outside paint. But the better one, again, would be the acrylic eggshell, the water-based satin paint, and that will take care of the problem. You won't know looking up. No one's going to look up and say, oh, do you know, Faulkner painted the ceiling. Well, the chance of Faulkner painting anything
depends
is zero.
Which Faulkner.
Yeah, well, of course, Mrs. Faulkner has painted the bathroom ceiling with a paint that should be used on doors. That's not going to happen. No one's going to notice that. I mean, it is entirely possible that she would do the painting, but it's entirely impossible that you would. But
I'm allergic to manual labour.
That'll take care of the problem.
Many's an argument has been had in houses, by the way, about the bathroom and the warm air that's left behind after a shower and whether you should open the window to let all that out.
Of course you should.
Yeah, all that damp air, but then you're letting all the cold air in. Yes. Many just open the door into the house instead.
Yeah, and I mean, people will find, I mean, if you say you open the bathroom after having a shower without having opened the window just as you leave, if there's a, in our case, there's a window just outside the ensuite bathroom, and it'll be completely covered in steam. So you're letting all that steam into the bedroom, which is not good either. And that will be a contributing factor in getting mould in the bedroom in the future.
You don't have a steamy bedroom then.
I couldn't possibly comment.
Okay. How do I kill weeds, asks Sue, without using the likes of Roundup?
There are various organic weed killers. A lot of them use extra strong vinegar. And they work. Now, they don't have any preventative action. So you only spray the weeds that you see on the same way as,
well,
as you would
itself,
with Roundup. Exactly.
Yeah,
so you just spray the weeds
action.
You see on the day. Now, I will say on very tough weeds or deep-rooted weeds, it'll probably only burn off the surface and it mightn't actually kill the weed itself. It might leave a root system alive. But for all the softer weeds, it will kill it.
Yeah. A listener is wondering, is there an algae or moss killer that is used on fencing and won't damage a vegetable garden that's nearby? In other words, something that's not harmful to the food.
Yeah, so most of the biocides are not harmful to food. Again, if you want, you can use the vinegar for that. It will do that as well, the extra strength vinegar. So rather than buy an organic weed killer that contains vinegar, you can buy just extra strength vinegar. It's much stronger. You won't be putting it in your chips now. I remember a guy opening it in the shop and he took a big, you know, he took a sniff. I told him, like, he knew it was vinegar.
Oh, no.
But he took a big sniff. He nearly passed out because it's, I think it's five or six times stronger than ordinary vinegar. And he wasn't
prepared.
Do you
remember they used to have these things you'd sniff years ago to clear your nostrils?
Yeah.
Smelling salts.
That's right. Yeah. It has that effect. Yeah, you'd nearly pass out with the smell of it.
That's all we have time for. But if you need to catch up with him, he's in Clunan's Hardware in Tullamore. And we'll be back here at 10:20 next Wednesday. Brian, thank you.
Thanks, Bill.